As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Batter up! Welcome to No Bunts, the podcast for the casual baseball fan here on The Athletic Baseball Show. I'm Tass Mellis, here in Atlanta. With me in studio, it's super producer, JD.
Hello.
What's up, JD? And my co-host all season long from Taiwan, it's Joel McMillan. Joel, how are ya?
I'm doing well. We've got some rain the past couple days, long overdue here, so I'm in good spirits.
What stadium background are you showing us, Joel? No rain there.
Tass, I'm embarrassed you're asking. You should know it. It's about 30 minutes from where you were born.
It's the X?
It is Exhibition Stadium, buddy. Yeah. Right there.
Yeah. That's. It looks like it, right, JD? But, yeah. you know, it does. This is a pre-renovation X. Like, there's nothing in left field. They put some stands in left field,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But it's anyway. Weird to see people in it, actually, because every time I was at Exhibition Stadium, there was me and a couple other guys. That's it.
All right, Joel.
It's a beauty.
Yeah, it's a beauty. I'm not embarrassed at all. Not embarrassed at all. We're trying to pretend that we're young here on this show, so try and pretend like that. Anyway, coming up on this show, we'll tell you what sub 500 teams you should believe in. We'll also discuss a new maneuver teams could use to find some young prospects out there. But first, I want everyone to get to know someone who burst onto the scene this week. Ellie De La Cruz, ridiculously exciting baseball player with the Cincinnati Reds. His first week in the majors, this prospect has produced. He's wowed. The stuff of lore in just 8 games for this guy. He's just fun. He's 21 years old, a switch hitting infielder for the Cincinnati Reds, plays third and short. He's big. He's 6'5", 200 pounds, but he could even be bigger than that. Anyways, he's a true five-tool player. He's fast, very fast. He's got a strong arm, very strong. He's got range. He can hit for average and for raw power. Wait till you hear the stats and the stories from week one to back all that up. Actually, Reds great Eric Davis said De La Cruz has 6 tools because he's a switch hitter, and he was called up to the Reds on June 6th. Before I tell you how he was discovered and everything he's done this week, Joel, what did you know of Ellie De La Cruz before he was called up?
Well, I knew he was a highly rated prospect, Tass. He jumped really high last year. He was a top 100 prospect going into the 2022 season, I believe, and he just had an absolutely monster year. He jumped from AA to AAA fairly quickly. He hit 28 home runs and had 47 stolen bases. That really put his stock up quite a bit. So I knew he had a lot of hype coming into his debut. But beyond that, I didn't really know much about him. I did a bit of reading on him to get ready for this. And he actually left home, Taz, at the age of 6 to have better access to tournaments and facilities in his native Dominican Republic. So, you know, that's quite amazing. I mean, 6 years old and he left home to start his baseball career. So fantastic story, just an injection of life into that team. And he's been on the national news. And yeah, Taz, I mean, it's only been 8 games, but I kind of feel like he's must-see TV almost already at this point.
Absolutely. I watched Game 8 yesterday, and I'm going to watch Game 9 today because it has been ridiculously exciting. I'm going to go through his background and what he accomplished in the minors and what he's accomplished through these 8 games. Shout out to MLB.com and C. Trent Rosecrans of The Athletic for all the juicy stuff I'm going to get into. Background story, De La Cruz grew up in Monte Plata, Dominican Republic, as you said there. He was 16 in 2018 when a scout discovered him accidentally, according to De La Cruz. That summer, a Red scout went to the Dominican Republic to check out another shortstop, but it was De La Cruz that caught his eye. The next day, that scout came back and said, actually, we want to sign you. This, again, according to De La Cruz. So July 2nd, 2018, scout Richard Jimenez signed De La Cruz for just $65,000, far below the big money sums often given to shortstop prospects in the Dominican Republic. He was thin back then, and De La Cruz realized he had to get stronger after his play in an informal league called the Tricky League. Yeah, that's the name of it. He said, quote, I could barely hit the ball past the infield. I had one home run. So he was, 16 back then. The next year, 2019, at just 17 years of age, he spent his first pro season in the Dominican Summer League. And then in 2020, because the minor league baseball season was canceled due to the pandemic, he grew a lot. That year off allowed him to get stronger. He would have been in the U.S. then for 2020, but because the season was canceled, he stayed in the Dominican Republic. The 2021 season was his first year, so just 2 years ago, playing in the U.S., and it was a good year. At 19, he was then listed at 6'2", 150 pounds, so 3 inches shorter and 50 pounds lighter than he is now. He said, quote, full of confidence, this guy. When I got here in extended spring training, I realized I was the best. and that's a theme of this guy as we get into his minor league career and his major league career. He started in the Arizona Complex League in 2021, moved up to low A ball. Great start, 296, 874 OPS across rookie ball in Class A. For a first year stateside, pretty good. And then in year two, he grew a ton. So this is 22. This is just last year, 20 years old, listed at what he's currently listed at, 6'5", 200. He's probably bigger than that by some accounts. You can see he's extremely tall. He wears 44. I love that. And the season started great last year. He's blasting home runs. He was playing on High A Dayton, where he was about 2.5 years younger than the average player as a 20-year-old. He was named to play in the All-Star Futures game, the prospect showcase at All-Star Weekend. The day he was named to the game, he had a great day. He had 2 home runs in a game, one from either side of the plate. Second game of the doubleheader, homered again, this one from the right side. First multi-homer day in the U.S., 3 jacks in one day. And I just wanted to note, the 2 homers from the right side were big because his left-handed side is his stronger side. He had 3 homers from the right and 15 from the left at that point last year in 2022. He moved up to AA later in the year. His first homer in AA, boom, it was 512 feet. It was, it was huge. And that also is a theme, as we'll get to. He was playing for the Chattanooga Lookouts, taking on the Rocket City Trash Pandas. Also, just wanted to mention those names because they are super fun here in neighboring states here from where I am here in Georgia. In 121 games last year, Joel, you mentioned those numbers, 28 homers, 86 ribbies, 47 steals, all the tools. Excuse me, 304 batting average, 359 on base percentage, and 586 slugging. Although he had 158 Ks, something he's working on, that's over 30% of his playoff appearances. Then he played in the Dominican Winter League. He played 150 games in 2022, and then he started this season in AAA Louisville. Joel, any questions to this point as I've rambled on here through some of his minor league play?
No, I mean, he's really dominated at every level he's been in. Tass, you did a great job highlighting his accomplishments, and he's moved through the system pretty quick too. You know, like, he just signed as an international free agent a couple years ago. And like you said, like, he was, I think you said, 2.5 years younger than his peers. So, you know, that's just a testament to the talent that he is. And, you know, he's an exciting player. And Tass, he you know, it's only been 8 games. It's a small sample size, but he certainly doesn't look out of place, you know, playing on the major league roster. That's for sure.
Yeah, in AAA this year, he was phenomenal through 38 games. 1031 OPS. I never know, Joel, if I should say 1,031 or 1031. Anyways, whenever you get over that number, it's a heck of a number. And he was over that through his first six major league games, and then he's dropped back the last couple days that we'll get to. But on June 6th, because he was kicking ass and Nick Senzel was injured, he was called up as a 21-year-old. He debuted on June 6, 2013. He batted cleanup, started at third base. The game was at home in Cincinnati. Thousands more seats were sold, according to Rosecrans of The Athletic, roughly 6,000 more than a typical Tuesday. The place was rocking. The first time he walked to the plate, got a standing O from the crowd. He got down 1-2, and this may not be the sexiest plate appearance, but he fought back to earn a walk against Tony Gonsolin of the Dodgers, which is a great sign for a young player. He was on second base with the bases loaded after that walk. He scored on a single, and he nearly caught up to the speedy Matt McClain in front of him. Again, a theme with this guy because he's so damn fast. Second plate appearance, got down 0-2 against Gonsolin again. Gonsolin threw a fastball up and in. He had the bat speed to whip the bat around and put it off the wall. He thought about a triple, but he'd save that for the next day. Pulled up with a double. The double had an exit velocity of 112 miles per hour. 112 miles per hour, the hardest hit ball of any Reds player this season. Then he walked again, very, very promising as he's trying to work on that walk to strikeout ratio. Then he grounded out. Even the ground outs are exciting, Joel. The ground out was the second hardest hit ball of the game, 108.7 miles per hour. Then he struck out looking at a perfect sweeper on the corner. Even that, you know, he's kind of showing patience. The problem with him is he swings at everything out of the zone, but he has shown a lot of patience, walking a lot through his first 8 games. The Reds came back on the Dodgers. McClain had a walk-off single to win it for the Reds. De La Cruz was doused with so many liquids in the clubhouse. He had to shower 3 times, apparently, to get it all off. He was 1-for-3 with a run scored and 2 walks in his debut. Joel, any thoughts on just his debut that game? Tuesday, June 6th.
Oh, Tass, that was, I feel, the series of the week. All three of those games were pretty exciting. The Dodgers kind of, you know, won a bit of a laugher in the third game. But those first 2 games, Tass, where, you know, he made his debut and then where he hit the home run in his second game, like that crowd was just electric. You know, that's a game in June, and it just felt like it was so much more than just a June game. He absolutely smoked that pitch, the reaction from the announcers and the crowd. Like, it was just a very kind of surreal moment. And Tass, since he's come up, you know, just to kind of build up when you said, he's slashing 296, 406, and 519. And Tass, he's 21 years old as a rookie. That's unbelievable. He's got 3 extra base hits in his first game, including a triple, a double, and a home run. And he's got 4 stolen bases. And Tass, like, he just, like I said earlier, he just puts a bunch of life into that team. He just completely changes the dynamic. And I don't think anybody expected anything from Cincinnati, but, you know, they're floating around 500, Tass. They're in the NL Central. I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs by any means, but with a guy like him and with the foundation they have, I mean, anything's possible, but he just makes that lineup look completely different.
Yeah, let's get to that second game because it was a mash. His first at bat. So we're talking June 7th here. He's starting at shortstop. He nearly hit it out of Great American Ballpark. His first at bat, he hit it so hard to right field. It landed in the last row, section 142, row 7, seat 21. Off Noah Syndergaard, a 458-foot blast. Yeah, the call by the Reds broadcaster was, that ball had a family. And yeah. It was hit so hard. It had an exit velocity of 114.8 miles per hour. The hardest hit ball by a member of the Reds this year, topping himself, his own double from the night before. The ball just flies off his bat. So a huge home run. Game number 2, next at bat, he ripped it to the wall, And this is where his triple comes in and his speed comes in. It took him 10.83 seconds to get to third, the fastest anyone has done it in baseball this season. Crazy little stats here, 30.9 feet per second, the fastest by a Red this year when you get into the StatCast. The StatCast loves him. They call the Cincinnati Reds the Red Legs. There's going to be some sort of integration with those legs, how fast he is around the bases. Those long, long, long strides. So homer and a triple and a double the day before, through two games, 3 for 7, and 2 walks as Cincinnati's cleanup hitter. And the Reds came back to beat the Dodgers again. And this time it was Will Benson hitting his first career home run to give the Reds an 8-6 victory. The vibes are changing around this team, obviously. So we'll jump to Saturday a couple games later because there's so many stories here from just 8 games. De La Cruz was on first on Saturday, June 10th. Jonathan India on second. So there's a ball hit to the wall. And De La Cruz took off on the crack of the bat. India came in to score easily from second, but he saw his teammate Tyler Stevenson on the on-deck circle telling him to slide, or he thought he was telling him to slide. India thought, what the hell, I'm scoring from second here on a ball that just went to the wall. But he was actually signaling De La Cruz to slide because he was right on India's heels, right behind him. I love these stories. Was he right on his heels? Okay, no. But it was a little bit of a mix-up as India came in to score. He thought, whoa, why am I getting the signal to slide? But it was for De La Cruz right behind him. And an easy score from first on a double to center field. After the game, De La Cruz said, in English, I am the fastest man in the world. And he is in the 100th percentile for MLB sprint speed, according to Baseball Savant. He also had his second steal in 2 attempts in the game. Joel, thoughts on De La Cruz saying he is the fastest man in the world? He usually speaks through an interpreter, although his English is pretty good. He switches back and forth. What are your thoughts on him saying that in English, proclaiming that just a few games into his MLB career?
No, Tass, he can say it in any language he wants. I mean, he's the real deal. Like you said, his sprint speed, I believe there's only 7 players that have sprint speeds similar to him this season. He's just unbelievable on the base pass, whether you're watching him hit or whether he gets on base. I feel he's always going to be a threat to steal. I like the bravado and two tests. The reason I like it is also I don't feel like he's showing anyone up with this. You don't really hear guys talk about their speed in baseball a lot, but I kind of like the bold proclamation. And I don't think he's saying, oh, I'm the best hitter, I'm the best player. He's not making any bold proclamations like that. He's just simply saying, I think I'm the fastest player in the world. I think I'm the fastest player in the league. And you know, so far he absolutely looks like he is. So more of it, please. Tass, I kind of get like a Randy, a Rosarina, Deion Sanders vibe from this guy. He's just excitement. He's got all that jewelry on. He's very confident in himself, obviously very talented. That's kind of the vibes I'm getting from him.
Yeah. Dave Roberts, Dodgers manager, actually compared him to Deion Sanders. So I can see that. And obviously the speed being a huge part of that. So let's jump to Sunday, June 11th here. Game 6 of his 8-game career. He had an impressive at-bat versus Adam Wainwright. Down 1-2, he fouled off a couple pitches. Then Wainwright put a curveball right on the outer edge like he has forever. And De La Cruz tattooed it. He hit it so hard. He didn't bloop it into left, which he could have, you know, go on oppo. He hit it really hard. It would have been a successful hit if it was a bloop. You know, a good piece of hitting, some would say. I stole that line from Rosecrans of The Athletic. That would make sense. But this ball was measured at 109.4 off his bat, the hardest hit ball of the game. He was even kind of on his front foot, but he kept his weight back long enough. He keeps coverage of the entire plate because he's so big. And that was really, really impressive to me. The 8th inning, getting back to the speed, he's on third representing the go-ahead run, so the infield was drawn in, and this guy just loves being aggressive on the base pass. A pretty conventional ground ball to shortstop's gonna go home and get him out, but he took off on contact and he beat the throw to the plate, reaching a sprint speed of 29 feet per second, whatever that means. It's just really, really fast. Would a perfect throw have beat him? Maybe But, you know, he gets his teammates going. He loves being ultra aggressive on the base pass. And so he slid under the potential tag there from Contreras. He went 2-for-3 with 2 walks, game number 6 here, 1 RBI, a stolen base, and 2 runs scored. And he had hit safely in his first 6 major league games before being hitless on Monday, which was another extra innings win for Cincinnati, who are hot. And then his final game, we'll get to yesterday, Tuesday, June 13th, game number 8. His first at-bat watching this game was fun. He walked, then he stole second, and the throw went into shallow right. He advanced to third, and he rounded third because he was thinking of going home. He's always thinking of taking the extra base. And he said this week, I just know that whenever they're not going to pitch to me, because they kind of pitched around him that at bat, that gives me an opportunity to contribute when I'm on base. He's just ready. He's 5-for-5 in steal attempts in his 8 major league games so far, and his speed, even when he just puts the ball in play, has a chance of beating it out. As he did twice this week on infield hits. Seeing him ground into a double play yesterday was actually kind of surprising. I thought, oh, he's going to beat this out, but he is human. So he also showed his rocket arm from shortstop yesterday, turning a double play. Commentators on both sides marveling just at his throw. I mean, it was a standard double play, but the arm on that guy, he's also had the fastest throw by an infielder in the big leagues this year. I don't know how they can really measure that, but it was measured 96.6 miles per hour. So overall, his stats through 8 games, we have slightly differing stats. I don't know. His slash line 267, 389, and 467. They've come down a little bit again. He was over 1,000 on base plus slugging, but his hitting balls hard, 118.8 miles per hour. A double he hit earlier in the season in the minors has been the hardest hit ball in either the majors or AAA this season. And pretty promising is that his walk to K ratio, 6-14 through 36 plate appearances. He's showing some decent plate discipline for a rook. So, man, a lot of tools. And the Reds, let's get to them. They're 6-2 since he was called up. This is a sub-500 team currently, Joel, but you mentioned that they're in the NL Central. Do they have a positive outlook for the season? Is there a chance that they can slip into the postseason?
Yes, that's a good question. I mean, right now they're playing with house money. You know, like I said earlier, no one really expected anything out of the Reds. I mean, I thought they were going to be competitive, but this was kind of, you know, their graduating prospects. Going into the season, Tass, they had 6 top 100 prospects. They've graduated a couple of those to the big leagues. Like you said, they're 6-2. They're you know, creeping around 500. So they have a good foundation in there. They've got a late bloomer in TJ Friedl. You know, they've got Matt McClain. You know, they've got like a lot of good young pieces. Jonathan India. I don't know if this year is going to be their year, just because I don't think ultimately they have the pitching. Their pitching's not great, but they definitely have a foundation in Tass. I think as early as next year, like, they could make a serious case to either win the division or at least make a run for the sixth seed in the NL. So this year, I don't know. I'm not going to rule it out, but I don't think I'd put money on it. But there's a lot to be excited about if you're a Cincinnati Reds baseball fan. They've got a lot of good, young, exciting players. But we'll see. I mean, the NL Central is just so wide open.
Right, yeah. And the Red Legs are using those legs. They kind of remind me of the Guardians of last year. They don't do it with the long ball, but they steal a lot of bases. They've stolen more bases than they did all of last year. And they definitely pride themselves on that. I saw Rosecrans of the Athletic say they have a daily base running meeting, which is very rare in Major League Baseball. But they're fun to get behind. I just said that De La Cruz, 5 stolen bases just through 8 games, which would be a, you know, ridiculous pace if he was playing the entire season. So he's got to be on the field along with a bunch of other shortstop prospects that they have. They just have to move people around. Jonathan India playing second now. He was the Rookie of the Year 2 years ago. Rookie Matt McClain, who's the NL Player of the Week in April, also plays short. They're going to switch off him and De La Cruz on the left side of the infield. Spencer Steer, the NL Rookie of the Month in May. They haven't called everybody up. You said they have called some. They've got Encarnacion Strand, Christian Encarnacion Strand in the minors. They're selling tickets. They are absolutely fun to watch. They need to upgrade their pitching, as you said. They're pretty low in payroll at $82.9 million and 26th in the league, so they could do that. And I wanted to give you this last note before we move on to some other teams that are promising in our next segment. It's non-Ellie news. The Reds had a signing this week in the amateur market, agreeing to a reported $1.2 million deal with Taiwanese shortstop Sheng-En Lin. So that one's for you in Taiwan, Joel. Big money for a shortstop prospect, Sheng-En Lin. So keep an eye on that, Joel. I will be watching the Cincinnati Reds team, you know, throughout the rest of the season. But I want you to tell me sub 500 teams that we should be watching the rest of the season, Joel. We'll do that right after a quick break.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Welcome back to No Bunts. We're about 60-plus games into the Major League Baseball season. We just talked about the Reds as turning it around, having actually a legitimate chance in the NL Central. But I want to talk about some other sub-500 teams that you believe in, Joel, specifically teams that can turn it around, make some playoff noise. Let's start in the AL. Which sub-500 AL team do you see turning it around, Joel?
Das, I've got two teams from the American League. I'm going to start with the Cleveland Guardians. Tass, I picked the Guardians to win the division going into the season. They won it last year, kind of unexpectedly. I think most people expected the White Sox would win, but they underperformed. So I still have a lot of faith in Cleveland. Tass, with Cleveland, it's really simple. They have no offense at all outside of Jose Ramirez and Stephen Kwan, kind of. Like, that offense is bad. They've got Ahmed Rosario and Miles Straw, two everyday players who are pretty much automatic outs and black holes offensively. So that's not a good look. But Tass, the good news for Cleveland is they've got excellent pitching. And when you've got excellent pitching, you're always going to at least have a puncher's chance. I expect this offense to get better, Tass, but not much better. Like, Cleveland's a team clearly built on their pitching. But, you know, again, they benefit. And this seems to be a reoccurring theme, but they just kind of benefit by being in the AL Central. It's not overly competitive. It's kind of like hot potato, I feel, you know, with that division. So I have a lot of faith in Cleveland to turn things around. They're a couple games under 500, but I like their chances still.
Yeah, their offense, as you said, Jose Ramirez had a three-homer game recently. I love Stephen Kwan's reaction to watching him hit three dingers from the bench. I hear you. They're a team I can get behind, though, because they are exciting. As I mentioned, we were talking about the Cincinnati Reds. Yeah, they don't do it with offense. They got to play small ball. And so that kind of makes them a different, unique team to watch. But who's another team in the AL that you got a little faith in despite their start?
I'm going to go with Seattle Mariners, Tass. And I know we talked about this before. Technically, the Mariners are not under 500. They got there last night with their win. But when I was writing this, they were. So we're going to talk about the Mariners.
It changes inning to inning, Joel. I was watching the game and I was thinking, are we going to talk about this team? They getting a W here, beating Miami. I was kind of hoping they were going to lose, to be quite honest, just so they were sub 500 for this segment. But anyway, maybe it was just because you had faith in them. They're going to turn it around, and they already started because they're 500 now.
They are. Yeah, they are 500. And Tass, Seattle's kind of weird because their offense is good. Their offense has kind of been touch and go, but like overall, if you look at Seattle's offensive numbers, they've been good. And Tass, their starting pitching is one of the best in the league. It's top three in the league. And their bullpen is also top three in the league. So you'd think that they would be more than a 500 team. I just think they've just kind of had a slow start. Julio Rodriguez got off to a really, really bad start. He's turned it on a lot. The thing is, though, Tass, is the Mariners play in a competitive division all of a sudden. The Angels look like they're going to kind of be in it this season. Houston, Texas is the real deal. Tass, the Mariners currently sit fourth in the AL West. They've got a good team. I think they're going to pass Anaheim at some point. I do think they're going to make the playoffs, but Tass, the American League is just so competitive as a whole, because then you've got the American League East and, you know, five teams. I mean, even Boston has a similar record to Seattle as well. I think Seattle's the better team, but it's going to be very, very competitive for Seattle, you know, with the division they play in and all the other teams kind of bunched in there. But they definitely have the talent to do it. And them getting a sixth seed, I don't think is out of the question at this point.
Joel, I told you we weren't going to date ourselves. As I said off the top about Exhibition Stadium, then you go and call the Angels Anaheim. You can't call them that anymore. It's not allowed.
Oh, what are they? The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim? Okay.
Well, yeah, no.
I'm sorry.
No, that's totally fine. I'm also slightly old, so I call them Anaheim as well. But it is a huge glut for the Mariners to get through. They've got to get through those Anaheim/Los Angeles/California Angels. And they got the Blue Jays as well above them. And they've got, as you said, a ridiculously tough division there, because the Rangers ain't going anywhere. The Stros are the Stros. So it ain't going to be easy. Let's go to the NL, though. Swinging it over, what NL teams do you believe in?
Tass, three NL teams, but I kind of have a bit of remorse with my first one. I'm going to pick the Mets. But Tass,
why are you starting with a huge market, Joel? I thought we were going to have some small market.
I like New York. I like the city of New York. It's a nice little town. But yeah, I mean, the Mets just can't be this bad for this long. Like there's just too much talent on this team. They just seem, I don't know how to describe what the Mets are doing. They just don't seem, I don't want to say they're disinterested, but they just don't look like a professional baseball team right now. When the hitting's great, the pitching's bad. Or vice versa. They've lost, I think, three or four series in a row now. They got, swept last week by Atlanta. But Tass, the NL, the silver lining for the Mets is there's still enough time to turn it around. They have enough talent on that team. They've got veteran players. The NL is just, there's opportunities to make the playoffs. Outside of the Dodgers and the Braves, I think those two teams are locks. But really, like, beyond that, I feel like it's pretty wide open. So I'm still going to believe in the Mets. That might come back to bite me, but there's just too much talent on that team. And I think that they're going to make the playoffs. But Tass, like, they need to start doing it now. Like, they're below 500 and we're almost halfway through the season. So they got to get it going right now. But I still believe in the Mets.
There are so many teams in the NL that are in it. Virtually every team that you can make a case for. So who are you swinging it over to now? Because you said you had three sub-500 teams that you believe in.
Going to stay in the NL East, Tass. I'm going to go with the Phillies. Tass, of the three NL teams.
This is going to be a glut. This is going to be a huge glut here.
Well, it's the NL East is a tough division too. Right. Defending National League champions. They were missing Harper. Trey Turner got off to a really bad start. But they've come on as of late. I want to see that team healthy. I think, and their offense is just so good. I know on paper right now, their offense doesn't look that great, but I don't think that's sustainable. I think that team just starts hitting combined with their excellent starting pitching. They're going to, I think they're just going to go on a huge run in the second half at some point. So I like Philly's chances the most. And then Tass, the third team, and I know we've talked about them a couple times before. I'm still going to stick with the Padres. I'm not scared. I'm not going down. I'm not turning my back. Again, similar to the Mets, just too much talent on that team. And Tass, they're hitting 201 with runners in scoring position, the Padres. There's no way mathematically that that team can do that over 162 games. Like, I just refuse to believe it. I think San Diego is definitely going to be in play for a playoff spot, but the division, like, Tass, Arizona's legit too, and they got to get over the Dodgers. So I still believe in San Diego, but again, like, it's going to be a bit of a dogfight for them too.
You say it's not mathematically possible, but I'd like to see them try. I do want to. I want to see some small markets get in. You picked a couple teams that have spent so much on talent in the Mets and the Padres. But as I said, everybody is still in it in the National League. So this is sort of a generic question. Is it just because of the expanded playoffs that teams have a shot? They all have a shot? Is that the case in the NL, or is there another reason for there being a lot of parity in the National League right now?
Well, Tass, that's definitely, I would say, probably the single biggest contributing factor at this point. But Tass, just for a bit of context, I just want to tell you this here. We've got 15 teams right now who are 500 or better, 7 teams that are 5 games or fewer under 500, and then 8 teams that are 5 games or more under 500. So to me, like, that's a very, very competitive league. Obviously, the addition of the extra playoff spot is going to help. But Tass, I think there's more to it than just that as well. I think teams saw what Philadelphia did last year. They were a low seed, went on a run. Like, kind of all you've got to do is get to the playoffs, and then it's anyone's game, kind of. And so I think that incentivized more teams this season to, you know, be a bit more aggressive with their plans, maybe spend more money, bring guys up, you know, and things like that. So I think that definitely had an effect on it as well, Tass. And also too, Tass, like, in recent years, a lot of teams have been tanking, similar to what, like, the Cubs and Astros did a long time ago to collect their picks and build those teams. And Tass, some of those teams have actually graduated some of those players. Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and Cincinnati are perfect examples of this, Tass, where, you know, they took their lumps. They didn't really feel that competitive of a team. They went with young players, you know, or cheap players. And now, you know, we're starting to see some of those teams bear fruit. And so that also is another reason why you're seeing a lot more parity. And then, Tass, another reason too is just, like, Texas and San Diego, and I know San Diego's scuffling a bit, but they just bought teams, basically. They just went out and spent a lot of money. So there's more parity, but it's a bit more complex than just saying, like, it's the addition of the playoff spot, because I think it's more than that. There's several different factors, but it's great to see for the league, Tass, because as a fan, this was a constant complaint that you heard of fans from teams that, you know, just said, we're not going to watch this team. We're not going to follow this team if they're just going to tank and not be competitive. So this is great to see so much more parity in the league.
You're right. It's definitely a complaint for fans. And I think the expanded playoffs has definitely helped teams have the idea, the possibility, the hope that they can make the postseason. As you mentioned, going through those numbers, a lot of teams within striking distance of 500, depending on the division, the NL Central and the AL Central still have hope of winning the division as well. So, yeah, there are a couple teams that are out of it. You know, the sad case of the Oakland A's, the KC Royals. Other than that, I mean, the Nets and the NL East, yeah, not going to happen. The Rockies, not going to happen. But other than that, yeah, you got a lot of hope for a lot of these ball clubs. And I heard Keith Law say this on the Athletic Baseball Show, that there will be expansion. There will be another couple teams that enter the league at some point. It'll be 32 teams. And that will probably create even more parity because they'll probably expand to 4 team divisions. And it will go 8x4. Basically identical to the NFL here in America to copy mm-hmm. that model and to keep everybody engaged later on in the season. But here we are, most fan bases definitely have a lot to hope for. All right, Joel, thank you for taking us through that. That was fun. We got to take a quick break, but after it, a little love for a move by the Padres that you noticed. We'll be right back.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB Show.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome back to No Butts. Joel, you went into this little news story on our Instagram account, and I wanted to get a little bit more from you today because the Padres have signed teen prospect, 17-year-old Ethan Salas. They allocated virtually all of their international pool play money on him, and typically teams splash their money around on a few prospects. So tell us about this maneuver. Is this maneuver by the Padres of going all in on one international player something that teams will do more of, or is this an outlier?
Taz, we're going to find out if Ethan Salas pans out. Just to add a little bit of context to this, Taz, I just want to quickly kind of explain how the international signings work. So basically, there's a window of time each year where MLB teams have a chance to sign these international players. And each team is allocated $4.75 million. Now, the 6 to 8 lowest markets, like in terms of population and revenue, they get additional picks. And I believe, Tess, they get a bit more money. I'm not entirely certain because it was a bit complicated, but basically, the smaller market teams have an advantage. Now, Tass, like you said, typically most of the time, these teams kind of spread that money out over several players, obviously giving the most money to what they feel is the highest rated prospect. And Tass, also too, I believe it just started this year, but teams can actually trade up to 60% of their international pool money, like in trades and transactions like that. So that's another little caveat. Now, as it pertains to Ethan Salas, he's kind of an outlier so far in that San Diego basically blew all of their money on one player. So we're not going to know for a couple years, Tass, but if Salas does pan out, this, I feel, could be something that teams might exploit. This might kind of be the next loophole, or, you know, the next thing that teams figure out how to take advantage of, especially small market teams, because Tass, the way it's positioned right now is that smaller market teams actually have the advantage, which is pretty clever because they can't compete with the big clubs in unrestricted free agency. So, you know, the international market kind of gives them a lifeline and gives them some different options to secure younger talent. So it'll be interesting to see, Tass. I personally think that teams are going to figure out ways to exploit this. And Tass, you know, like if Salas pans out, we might see teams just kind of foregoing, you know, splashing it on, you know, a few players and basically going all in on one. But that remains to be seen.
The caveat that you mentioned there the ability to trade some of this pool play money. Do you see that also leveling the playing field for some small market teams, as in, okay, we're going to give, hey, the Mets, you need a reliever at the deadline, we'll give you him, but we need some pool play money to be able to take another swing at a prospect. Is that a possibility?
Oh, Tass, absolutely. And I fully expect small market teams to do that because, you know, they can leverage that and use that to their advantage. I think that's much more valuable, even though it might be like 25,000 TAS or 50,000 of pool money. That's chump change. But like in the grand scheme of things, TAS, like these kids that they're approaching, you know, if you sit down and you offer a kid a 16-year-old $4 million, $5 million, I don't particularly think he's going to care if it comes from the Dodgers or the Pittsburgh Pirates. He's just, you know, he knows that at least he's going to have some generational wealth probably if he takes this deal. And he's probably going to take the highest money deal. So it's absolutely an advantage task for these small market teams to kind of, you know, get as much of this international pool money as they can, because it absolutely gives them a bigger advantage, you know, against the big clubs in this international free agent market.
Hey, Ellie De La Cruz signed for $65,000. Initially, and things have turned out well. Ethan Salas is a very interesting one, and not quite the tools of Ellie De La Cruz, but you outlined it on our Instagram account, @no_bunts, pretty well, and he's looks promising, as you know a lot of these young prospects do. I've always wondered about this international pool play money and how it works, so you've done a fantastic job of explaining it, Joel. One more question. Does this all happen in a certain window, a certain time period of the season, of the calendar, of the baseball calendar, where the money is offered?
Tass, it does. I'm not entirely sure when the window is. I believe it's sometime in the summer. I don't know how long that period extends for. I could be wrong, but yeah, there is a certain period. But Tass, most of these deals are worked out well in advance. Like the clubs obviously forge a strong relationship, you know, with some of these players, you know, international players. So yeah. But Tess, like, I just want to come back to what you said about, you know, De La Cruz. I mean, that shows how complex this is, because Tess, like, to me, like, a draft pick is almost a lottery ticket. Like, some lottery tickets are better. Maybe they're more of a sure thing, but in essence, they're a lottery ticket. And Ellie De La Cruz, you said $65,000. The Reds might hit the absolute jackpot on that. And then you've got a guy like Salas, who the Padres spent over $5 million on, and maybe they hit the jackpot on him too, but they just go about it in very different ways. So that kind of shows the complexity and just, you know, kind of how unpredictable, you know, drafts can be. And it'll be really interesting to see, like, will teams, you know, go the traditional route and, you know, kind of, you know, spread that money over several players? Or are teams going to be more aggressive and think, man, this kid's only 16, but we think he's the real deal. We're going to put all of our money into him. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. It just adds a different dynamic to roster construction.
The only sure thing I know of is that we'll be watching the All-Star Futures game the Saturday of All-Star Weekend together, whether it's virtually or not.
Okay. Is that an invitation to ask when you come stateside?
You don't need an invitation to come stateside. You come on over whenever you want. This is also your stateside. We accept everyone.
Okay.
In my country,
I'll bring the almonds. I'll bring the almonds, Tass.
Joel has made fun of me because he was asking what snack I was eating, JD, once, and I showed him a bag of Trader Joe almonds, which are not almonds as we know them. They're covered with this candy coating, the sugary, buttery goodness. They're damn good. So that's a snack.
What is it covered in? Like yogurt or?
No, it's like a sugary. Oh. It's got like a candy shell on the outside.
Oh, I know that stuff you're talking about.
But inside, it's like a butter. It's buttery goodness, yeah. And then a little bit of a hard shell. It's a nut inside. There's some great stuff in there. So
yeah, sweet, salty. You got it all.
Bang, bang.
What's the problem with that, Joel? I don't understand.
Yeah, what's the problem?
Tess, I wasn't making fun. No, I wasn't making fun. I just said, what are you having for a snack? And you took a photo. I was like,
you
okay,
said, well,
I accept
that. Your quote was, you would. Like I'm Mr.
Yeah,
Health.
That's not making Mr. fun. Health nut. I'm like, you're pretty healthy guy. I've seen photos of you jogging on Instagram, and you know you're looking good. You know your body's your temple, Cass. So I applaud the almonds. Although with everything you just described, that totally negates any health value.
Oh yeah, they're not healthy
the
at
almond.
All.
Okay.
Oh yeah,
I'll still bring almonds. I'll still bring almonds.
Please do. Yeah, healthy ones because we need them. Actually, the cashew ones at Trader Joe's are even better. The non-healthy.
Get out of here.
Just really quick, hot take before we finish. Pistachio, best nut. I won't be responding to comments.
I mean, I
won't.
Kind of agree with you.
Joel, you're a tough nut to crack. That's for sure, my man. All right. You can find Joel's work at our Instagram page, @no_bunts, along with this show every Wednesday on the Athletic Baseball Show on YouTube. 8:15 Eastern. Not for Joel. 8:15 p.m. for him, 8:15 a.m. Eastern for us. You can stream live with us every Wednesday morning or get it wherever you pod afterwards. TheAthletic.com/baseball show or TheAthletic.com/no dunks for an incredible deal on The Athletic, writing the best sports writing in the world. For JD, for Joel, we'll see you next week, Wednesday, June 21st.